Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
There was nothing, literally nothing, on a grand scale to worry about. Welcome to the Kevin Clancy Show. I've been in this game over a decade, and I knew I needed a place where I could run wild on my own solo podcast, where I tell personal stories, I deep dive into conspiracy theories, we rip through the current events of the day, and we do sit-down conversations with the most interesting people on the internet. Make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode. What's up, you mutts? It's another episode of the Kevin Clancy Show, the first ever episode in the history of the Kevin Clancy Show in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is ordinarily where I talk about the Spite Tour, but no guests again today. And I'm thinking about putting the Spite Tour on hiatus. The whole idea behind the Spite Tour was me bringing in all these guests on my own that the bookers at Barstool refused to book. And we did it for, you know, what, probably like 20, 30, 40 episodes, whatever it was. Did a bunch of great guests, bunch of great interviews. But then just last week doing this solo pod, I got a lot of great feedback of people being like, I just love listening to you solo. So I'm kind of up in the air. Do we keep this? Do we keep doing the Spite Tour and keep doing these long-form interviews, which I think are great, or do you want me to just pick out topics and let it rip and just fly solo? Both ways work well. So I guess give me some feedback. Do you prefer it to be the interviews? Do you prefer it to just be me? I could still do behind the blog and do like a once-a-month Barstool interview while still just letting it rip and talking about whatever you guys want to talk about. Leaning towards doing the solo pod thing because it's just that much more work to book these people and bring them in. And I thought we were doing like unbelievable, top-notch A-plus interviews. But if it's not going to get the attention and the eyeballs and ears that it deserves, where I think we're doing so, I think we were doing the best like interviews in the fucking podcast game today with some of the names that I was getting and some of the topics we were breaking down. But if people are just as happy to just submit some questions and some topics and just fuck around with me solo, I'm happy to do that. So got a lot of good feedback over the holidays from people. I did talk about how I felt like I was in like a podcast slump and I felt like the content wasn't really clicking. And I got a lot of people reaching out being like, you know, I love it more than I love it as much as I always have. And you're in your head. So a lot of good, a lot of positivity that kind of got me out of my own head. So I thank you guys for that. Today, we're going to fly solo. Once again, I got to start with this little argument I was having on social media, which is something that we've been talking about forever on the internet. And it's as cliche and trite as it gets. But the Barstool Sports account tweeted out a video from a New York City real estate broker giving a virtual tour of a studio apartment that cost $1,900. And the Barstool account posted like, isn't New York great? Meaning that, you know, you get a studio apartment, no bedroom, and you live in this shoebox for $1,900. Now me, being from New York City my whole life, I looked at this video. It was this clean apartment with exposed brick, natural light. It's a studio, so yeah, you don't have a lot of space. It's all one room. I actually love the idea of a studio for when you're like single and alone, you just have one room to maintain. I love that. Trick it out. You can make that one room as nice and as hooked up as you want. And you just maintain that one room. You don't need all the space in the world when you're living that lifestyle. I have no problem with just having a kitchen, a bathroom, and a room to live in where it's like, I'm basically on my bed or watching TV or sleeping. That's it. So I can operate in that one room. So maybe that's the crazy New Yorker in me, but I'm all right with a studio. And I see this nice spot. I'm like, I'm thinking about that. Some of the places I lived and some of the money I paid. I'm like, I would fucking, if you get a place in a nice neighborhood for under $2,000, I'm like, yo, this is a steal. And so I tweeted like, I don't even think this is a bad deal. And then you get, then it's on. Then it's just like walking in the room and dropping a stick of dynamite and letting the fight erupt. And you get all of the New York City is a hellhole people come on out. And then you get the New York City Sex in the City, like every day is a movie here defending it. And I can't stand either group of people. You're all insufferable. And I can't believe that this is like a hard concept to even comprehend. But I'm talking to you as a 36-year-old man who is now a father, who lived in New York as a single guy, did the partying, young, fun, entertaining scene, and now I'm doing the older in life, raise the kids scene, and I'm doing it all in the New York area. So, and I'm a guy who understands that New York is disgusting, it's expensive, there are homeless people, there's garbage, it's overcrowded, all of that shit. So I've done it all, so I am the person, and people like me can explain to you exactly how this works, and it's a incredibly simple concept to understand. And if you're not from here, or you didn't basically have like a time where you were like young and trying to party, maybe you can't understand it. But here's how you break it down. New York City, you live there when you are young, and you deal with the fact that it's super expensive, and you're going to get a small apartment, and it's not going to be the most glamorous life at all, and you're going to deal with homeless people and overcrowded subways and garbage on the streets because it's fucking awesome to live here when you're young. You do this when you're young and you don't care about those things. If you're like early 20s and you're bothered by some garbage on the streets, or you get all up in arms about real estate prices or what your money is doing for you or the savings account that you could have or all this other shit, then I don't know what to tell you. You're the worst young person in the world. You live in this city when you're not worried about your savings. You're not worried about space. You're not worried about school. You're not worried about raising kids. You live here when you want to party and you want to fuck and you want to try to succeed in your career. And those are the things that New York does best. If you want to make it in business, in entertainment, in whatever your realm is, New York City is one of the capitals of the world to do that in. You can go to LA, you can go to New York. There's a bunch of, you know, top capital cities all over the world. But you got to be in one of those cities if you're going to try to make it as one of the best, you know, financial eye bankers in the world or the biggest lawyers. Or certainly if you're doing something like entertainment. There's a reason why Barstool Sports all moved to New York City. There's a reason why Broadway is here and the New York and the late night shows are here. This is one of these spots, all the best comedy clubs, all that shit. New York is a capital of it. So you come here when you want to try to make it as big as you possibly can. You come here when you want to try to party as much as you possibly can in the best bars and clubs and restaurants. And you come here when you want to have as much sex as you can and stay out as late as you can and fuck the best looking people that you can possibly fuck. That's why you live in a city. You don't come to live in a city and want to have extra bedrooms and spare room in the closet and you can show off your fucking mud room or whatever the fuck you give a shit about. That's not what matters. When you're young, you're dumb, you want to party, and you don't care about the drawbacks. New York City being crowded is a good thing because it's more people for you to fuck and hang out with. New York City being open all night with people like pissing on the street and stumbling all over and fights are happening and there's drama and there's violence and there's sex and there's craziness. That's what you want because you're young and dumb and partying. So you do all of that now when you're young. And of course, when you're my age, when you're 36, as soon as you don't do that shit in the city, you get the fuck out. That's how the system works. You come to the city to make more money, and everything is more expensive, so it ends up being a wash. And in exchange for that, you get small places in a overcrowded, dirty, problematic city, and in exchange, you have the time of your fucking life. And I get everyone comes out of the woodwork being like, $1,900 bucks? I could get a four-bedroom house in Oklahoma for that money. Well, then you live in fucking Oklahoma. And I know some people think that's the greatest thing in the world. You want to live on like a fucking, I can't even talk in terms of acres. That's how little I know about this world being like a city guy. I don't even know how many acres is a lot of acres. But if you want to tell me I've got fucking 30 acres in Oklahoma where I have a farm and all these bedrooms and a basement and blah, 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 blah. And you like that? Cool. Good for you. But when I was 22 years old, 24, 26, 28, I was like, I want to be in a city where I can go out all night to some of the best bars, clubs, restaurants, places in the world with a ton of young people who are all doing the same thing I'm trying to do, trying to make it as big as you possibly can, and we're all going to get drunk all night long till all hours, till the sun comes up, and we're going to fuck each other. And if you don't like that, And it makes no sense for you to pay a premium to live here. And if you're a person who wants to live in Oklahoma, then this doesn't make sense to you. But the people from these towns in the Midwest or these cities that are not known as capitals of industry and entertainment and partying, like nobody, you have to understand that you, where you live and what it is and what it isn't. There's a reason why people move to the big city. It's because that is where a lot of the premium jobs are. That is where a lot of the premium restaurants and entertainment and stars and important shit goes on. Companies' headquarters are here. All of the important shows and places film here. Like it or not, whether you want to admit it, that's what New York is. And they're also, and that is a very tangible thing that you can't deny. And I will say there is also something intangible about New York. And a lot of people over-dramatize this and glorify it. And they end up sounding stupid too, where they're like, the city that never sleeps. And it's like, shut the fuck up. It is this hellhole. But there is some intangible about it that is like people are, it's rough, it's tough, it's quick. You got to be like, the city will swallow you up if you're not sharp and witty and tough and smart and stand up for yourself and bust balls and do, you know, at work you're going to like grind and negotiate and play hardball and fight and, you know, there is a level of like it's fast paced and you got to keep up. And that breeds a lot of when people talk about like the buzz of the city and all those corny words, it means that we're just like funny, witty people who are all in this rat race trying to fucking stab each other in the back, get on top of each other, fuck each other, bust each other's balls. It's just boom, 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 boom. There is an element to that when you get everybody in the same place, all go in that direction. It's not a slow-paced, relaxed, laid-back, podunk town. And some people, again, hate that. Some people think that's awful. It gives them anxiety. It makes them want to fucking die thinking about being crowded up against all these people and all being superficial and all being about money and who makes the most and who looks the best and all of that shit. And again, if you're not one of those people, then you don't pay the premium. You stay out of it. But there is a reason why people try to get out of their small town and they get a fucking one-way bus ticket to here. And all they need is, you know, a few dollars and a place and a roof over their head, and they're going to make it. And that's what those apartments are. It's literally just a roof over your head for the period of time in your life when you don't care about anything other than yourself. When you're grinding for your career, when you're grinding for fun, you're meeting people, you're fucking people, and you're living out your dreams. When you live in that life, you don't, you're not even in your apartment. Your apartment is simply to sleep and bang and hang out a couple times, like for a couple hours before you go out. You're either at work or at the bar till like 4 a.m. and you just need someplace to keep your fucking clothes before you, you know, change and go back out again. So you don't need all the space. You don't want all the space. You're not living that life. And then, you know, you get the people defending it and fighting against it. And it's like, you're all dumb assholes because it's just about what stage of your life you're in and what you value. And people, once you're out of it, it's like, oh, that sounds terrible. I would never do that. Yeah, you're old and lame. As soon as you stop going out and doing what the city offers the most of, then why would you pay the premium to live there? If you're not going out and hooking up and partying and going to those bars and restaurants, get the fuck out. If you've got kids and you need a backyard for them to play in and a basement for them to hang out in and multiple bedrooms for everyone to sleep, then you can't live in the city unless you're wildly rich. That's the other thing too. Everybody who is wildly rich, you have your house in Connecticut or Jersey or Long Island or Westchester, and then you also have your penthouse apartment in Manhattan because you want to be here where the action is. You want to be here. You want to go to the Garden and see a concert or watch a Knicks game or the teams are in the playoffs or the New York Fashion Week is here or the president's in town or all the stars are out for this event, Saturday Night Live. You're going to the parties with the celebrities. You see the famous comics in the comedy clubs. Chappelle's popping in. Chris Rock's popping in. All these things I'm rattling off. You're not going to get in fucking Kansas City. I love the people who are like, you can party anywhere. You can fuck people anywhere. It's the same experience. No, it's fucking not. Yes, you can go out to bars all over the world. Yes, there are always plenty of people to have sex with. Yes, there's fun to be had everywhere. And do I think other cities are underrated? Yes. Do I think that New York City can be overrated by the people who romanticize it? Yes. But don't tell me it's the same thing, because it's not. You don't pop into the comedy club in fucking Iowa and you're not seeing Dave Chappelle work out new material and Chris Rock gets pulled up on stage too because they're just hanging out in the city that night. It doesn't happen. And maybe, again, maybe that's not what you care about. Maybe you don't care about, celebrities in the streets and seeing, the stars and being in the same. I guess the thing about New York is that it's like a great equalizer where it's like, I'm rich, you're poor, I'm rich, I'm in the middle, you're at the penthouse, you're at the bottom, you're homeless, you're a guy, you're a girl, you're young, you're old, everybody's on the subway, everybody's in the same restaurants, everybody's in the same clubs, everybody can be seen in the same parks, and it's like, we're all here, and yeah, there's certain levels that you're not going to, or places you're going to go, or levels you're going to achieve, but for the most part, we're all on the same little battlefield here, and so it's not the same. Don't fucking tell me that. And then I get the people coming out being like, I had someone say, wait until you find out about like how awesome Austin and Miami is. Yeah, Miami, South Beach, pretty fucking awesome, dude. You think you're not paying out of your ass to live on fucking South Beach? Yeah, you're paying the same amount of money there, dude. You don't think you're paying money to live in Austin right now? Now, Austin, that's an overrated city. That's a city that doesn't back it up. New York City, for all of the hype, when you get there, It lives up to the hype in the sense of like it's important, people that matter are here, like it's going on 24/7. Wall Street for the finance world, Broadway for the artsy crowd. You've got the comics, you've got the artists, you've got the music, you've got the bars, the drinking, the sex, the drugs, all that shit. It backs it up. Austin is this town that I think has become so overinflated, basically going from like a bachelorette city to a tech city where they've just decided it's going to be the best. And it's like the most rapidly overcrowded city like in the world right now. It's something like 800 people per day are moving to the city. Prices are skyrocketing. San Francisco is the same way. There are other expensive cities and shitty cities. Don't get me. Boston's another one. Boston is wildly expensive and you get that tiny little town for it in exchange. If I'm going to pay that money, I want to be somewhere that's fucking massive. That is an overwhelming beast. That does have the hardest, roughest, toughest streets and the biggest assholes and the richest dickheads and the most to lose and the it's got to be the hardest challenge. All of that shit. I'm certainly not going to pay it. I'm not going to pay that premium and then go live in like the same like 10 block radius that everyone else in Boston lives. So in that regard, New York is like at least it you get what you pay for. Not many people are living in New York being like, it's pretty boring. Like, I don't really get the hype. You might be like, it's disgusting. It's gross. I don't like the homeless people. I don't like the crowds, all that shit. And again, that's totally fine. That's your prerogative. But don't tell me, like, it's not like incomprehensible why we do it. And don't act like, Charlotte, North Carolina is probably a beautiful little city with a nice little skyline. And it's clean. There's probably a few awesome places to go and one or two spots that are renowned for this dish or that form of entertainment or this person goes there or whatever. It's fine. And in New York, you get like 100 times that. You get all of that shit where regular ass people can go. So yeah, that's a nice spot. It doesn't compare. There's very few people, there's very few places that do compare. And there's a reason why there is something to like the proof in the pudding of it all, where it's like, I don't know. There's a reason why New York City has just withstood the test of time the last like fucking 300 years or whatever as the spot. Because it's where the most shit's happening, the most fun, the most excitement, the most money, the most sex, the most drugs, the most. And when you're doing all that stuff, you're not worried about a backyard. You're not worried about school districts. You're not worried about savings accounts and taxes and all that shit. You're like, I'll pay out of the ass. I'll live check to check. I'm not worried about the future right now. I'll sleep when I'm dead. And I'll party my fucking face off with everyone else who's doing the exact same shit as me. And if you can't understand that, like, why would anyone ever pay that? I just fucking explained it to you. And then as soon as you're old enough, that stuff doesn't appeal to you anymore. Or it does appeal to you, but you've just grown up and you have new responsibilities, you get out. And I'll tell you what, for everybody who's like, I can't even imagine it. I want like my fresh air. Like the people are like, okay, you have that, dude. I have fresh air, a fireplace, my savings account, and like my sanity. It's like, okay, man. All right, grandpa. Sounds great. You take your fucking fresh air with you, your boring ass life. That's just, and that's not me being like a hardo or me trying to be like, I'm cooler than you. It's like, if that's what you want in this life, if you want to tell me that you've got fresh air and a savings account, by all means, God bless you, but you sound like a fucking boring person to me. I'd rather have all sorts of wild ass stories about the time we were all like six people crammed into a 4-bedroom apartment, just trying to have as much fun as we possibly can, grabbing fucking STDs and getting addictions. That's life when you're young, man. You can do fresh air and 401ks when you're older. Doing it now because you, I don't know, don't think it's a wise investment or a good use of your money. Yeah, no fucking kidding. That's not what the point is when you're in your mid-20s. So if I can just possibly clear that up for the people who can't understand. When you're young, you have different priorities than when you're older. And you know what the real way to prove it all is? To a man, if you ask all the people, if you lived in New York City and now you live in the suburbs, ask any of those people who had the apartment in Murray Hill out of college or on the Upper East Side and then got a little bit of money and lived in like the West Village and then made it in their career and got a spot in the meatpacking. And then they really made it and they have a family and they got to get out. And now even if you are successful and rich and all of that shit, you're living in the burbs. You got your wife and kids or your husband and kids. And you go to a restaurant in town maybe. And the big excitement is when you go to fucking Costco and load up on all the food. And, you know, you're doing like T-ball on the weekends and you're only... social interactions or your kids' parents, your kids' friends' parents, all that shit. Ask those people what they remember most or where they would want to live most. Ask them if they're happy now with their 3 bedrooms and their garage and their backyard and all that, or if they would want to go back to the shoebox apartment when they were living in the Lower East Side, trying to just fucking scrap by while they partied all night, meeting all sorts of weird people, fucking all sorts of weird people, putting all sorts of weird things in their bodies, running in circles they should never have been, pulling off things, you know, sneaking into places. And remember that crazy time where we were backstage here and snuck into there and lived that New York City life? Ask them which they would prefer, which one they would want to do right now if they could snap their fingers and enjoy it. And almost all of them are like, take me back. Take me back there when my apartment wasn't a good sound investment, but I had like the most fun. And you know what? And it's not like you don't necessarily move to New York and make the most money and fuck all the beautiful people and go to the best clubs and get in at all these fancy places and get a reservation at all the restaurants, but you want to fucking try. And most people get chewed up and spit out, but they gave it a shot. And maybe you didn't make it all the way, but you made it halfway. And that's, there's memories and experiences for that in its own right. And then you quit. Some people get chewed up and spit out and they don't make it at all. And that lifestyle is not for them. And some people make it to the absolute top. And it's the best thing that, you know, you can do for that decade of life when you're in your 20s into your 30s. But everybody I know, when you ask, like, what would you rather be doing right now? Talking about your 401k and breathing in the fresh air while you talk about like cleaning out your chimney because you have, you know, 2 fireplaces in your very efficient cost per square foot abode, or that time that you were living in that like shitty apartment, but you were fucking that hot chick next door. Everybody wants that. So I just can't understand the people who don't understand it and don't get it. It's a very simple thing to understand. And let's be honest, the reason why you get bent out of shape and all fired up about it is there's some weird level of jealousy that goes on with the people who live outside of big cities. And then there's some sort of weird defense thing that kicks in for the people that do live there. Because when you live here, you know that you're spending too much money and it's gross and you feel the need to defend it. And when you live in a shitty, boring ass suburb, you know that sucks and you have to defend it by saying, well, I have a big house that's inexpensive. So both things have their pluses and their minuses, and the people who feel the need to defend those things and minimize the bad and maximize the good, like defend it to the death, I just don't get that. Because having done both, it's like, when I was this age, I wanted this. So I spent this to get that. And when I'm this age now, I want that. So I spend this money on those things. And that's the way the fucking world works. Oh, let's not try to act like it's all just the same thing. You just pick which town to do it in. It's all just about what you want in this life. And there's different people. There's weird fucking people out there. We're about to talk to them now. We're going to do the Ask Me Anything that we've been doing the past couple weeks here. I got a few more submissions of people writing in questions. So today's Kevin Clancy Show mailbox is brought to you by 3Chi.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequilacation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Let's go through the mailbox here. Some new questions. Perfect. This comes from Jillian. My girl Jillian Roslin, big Mets fan. If you listen to We Gotta Believe, you know Jillian well. If you had to pick one single year from your life to be your favorite, what would it be and why? Births of your children excluded, which is fair. That's a good caveat to put in because A, you sound like a scumbag if you don't pick the years your child was born, and B, they do trump pretty much everything else. So take those out. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. Very, very few people are going to be like, you know what? 34. 34 was great, man. When I was living in the burbs, we were going to Stu Leonard's on Saturdays. We were involved in the PTA for the kids, and we were paying all those taxes for school. Man, what a year. No! Nobody fucking says that, ever. The only time you're picking years out of your... If you are picking the quote-unquote best year of your life, and it's not in your 20s or like early 30s at the latest... it's because you have like really succeeded in life and you've become wildly rich. If you're like, yeah, the best year of my life was 41 when I sold my company and I made like, you know, $50 million. Yeah, that I can understand. Other than that, that is the great lesson of life and why it's so fucking stupid. This is why New York can be smart. This is why New York can be stupid. On the one half, New York is what I described, where it's just like, you're going to be poor, but you're going to have fun. On the other hand, it's the rat race where you're like, I got to move here to move up the corporate ladder to get, you know, the highest position at the headquarters of the company in the big city where I can become the richest and the best, right? And it's that materialistic drive where you want to make the most money you can to achieve what? The happiness you're looking for isn't coming out. Your fondest memories, your happiest times are not when you're making your most money. Again, unless you're like wildly wealthy. Smart people, actually, that I might take that back. Smart people who don't get married and have kids later in life, they kind of get the best of both worlds because they're like, I'm making money now because I'm a manager or a senior this or I got promoted to that, but I also don't have any bills. But for the rest of us, as we make more money, it's when we decide to settle down and buy a house and get a couple kids and acquire all these bills and save for college and all that. So you're making 10 times the amount of money, but you have 10 times the amount of bills. And now the money's a wash, but the stress is driving you crazy. Whereas back when I was, I'm going to call it, I think 26 was my year, my happiest year. You know why it is? It's not because of what I had and didn't have. It's not because of the fun I was having, the places I was going, the people I was fucking, that's all part of it. It was just when life was easy. I was having this exact discussion the other day, and I said 26 was the last time I was truly, genuinely happy, because 26 was the last time I would wake up in the morning and not be worried about anything. There was nothing, literally nothing, on a grand scale to worry about. Would I wake up and be like, fuck, I gotta get this work for At that point, I was still working at Deloitte and at Barstool. So I'd be like, oh my God, I got to get that CDO portfolio done. I got a deadline. I got to meet my manager. Oh, fuck. Or I'd be like, oh shit, I got to make sure I get these blogs up and make sure I get my page views up in Barstool. But those were like, those are just like small stresses that everybody has in a day-to-day life. I had no grand problems to worry about. Maybe the occasional, like, somebody in the family dies. Oh my God, that's tragic. But everybody deals with those things. There was nothing in my life created by me, caused by me and my life choices that I had to worry about on a daily basis. Late 20s, early 30s became settling down, getting in a relationship, dealing with the stress of that, dealing with the stress of getting married, proposing, getting married, being married, having kids, getting divorced, all of that eats at your soul. Being in a relationship, like when you're young and you're single, you're not dealing with a relationship that is draining you and making you unhappy and turning you into a person you don't want to be. You don't have any kids to worry about. You don't have any major bills to pay. It's like, I just got to pay this rent. And that's really it. You just had to pay rent. That was 26 for me. And yeah, like I was living in the city. So I guess it's more like 24, 25, 26, somewhere in that year. I was living with a bunch of guys I wanted to live with, had no problems there. Every day I came home to a place I wanted to live in with people I wanted to live with. I was working a job that was either making me money to provide me with the things I want to do and the places I want to go, or I also started to work at Barstool where I was like, this is something I can actually, it could be a career for me and I could like dedicate myself to. So those two things were good. And I was in a place that was fun. I didn't have any major bills. I didn't have any major problems. So really, to me, your favorite year is not even the one that you make the most money or do the most things or go to the best places or any of that. It's just the year that your life is easiest. And that is what you take for granted so much when you're young. Just the ease of life. Like, you know what they don't tell you? They don't fucking tell you that even just as a regular ass person, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night and have an anxiety attack. Like, I will just wake up at 3 a.m. and my mind is racing. And I'm just thinking about all the problems I have and the shit that I got to worry about, the stuff I got to pay for and the things that I got to achieve and the people who are holding me back and the people who are making things harder for me and all this shit. And you're just like, and you got to calm yourself down with some 3-Chi or some meditation or some shit like that. I thought that was for people who have like problems, mental issues, real, you know, actual hardships in life. That's just like getting old. You're going to have full-blown anxiety attacks, full-ass anxiety attacks in the middle of the night when you wake up and every morning. Every morning I wake up. And when I was 26, I would just wake up and be like, what's on the schedule today? I don't know. I'm going to go to work. Maybe I'll go to happy hour. Maybe I'll meet somebody. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll call that person and hook up with them. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll see the guys. Maybe I'll just hang out. Is there a game on tonight? Okay, cool. That was every morning. Now it's like, well, I got to pay this and I got to pay that. And if I don't, then this is going to happen. And even when I do pay, I'm going to hear from that person. That person's not going to be happy. Also, this thing at work, while it's of my own doing, if I don't figure this out, that's going to be a problem. The more responsibility you acquire, the more people rely on you. The more people rely on you, the more you're stressed. That's the thing. When you don't have kids, spouses, or coworkers, or the people underneath you at work that like rely on you, having people rely on you is for the fucking birds. That's what I'm trying to say here. And they don't tell you that all of that is going to make you so fucking stressed. And don't hit me with like first world problems, champagne problems. Oh, my job is so hard when I'm like getting promoted, all that shit. Like, yeah, these are in some cases good problems to have. These are in some cases, we're not talking about, I don't know where my next meal is going to come. But we're talking about like the stress of life. And as you get older and you put those, and most of it's self-induced, but man, they don't tell you that is going to, like, you're going to become an old, anxious, neurotic person when you used to just be like a carefree, relaxed, go with the flow and enjoy life sort of person. So I bet to a man and woman, everyone listen to this, if you're picking out your favorite year, if you're still young, you're just picking which year was the funnest, which year had the most parties, the most men, the most women, the most sex, the most, all that shit. But if you're older, you're probably picking the year that had the least amount of stress for you. Because, man, you start to realize that's the name of the game. Stress is what fucking kills everybody.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern for the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1. Every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 this Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Next up, I guess this would be another question that kind of works here. This guy says, I'm a late 20s accountant. I look at the partners and managers at my firm, and I don't know if that path is right for me. I'm okay at my job. I'm good, not great. And it's not the worst thing in the world, but it pays okay. Busy times suck, but whatever. Married and have a mortgage, but no kids yet. My wife's great. What I wanted to hear from you is your thought process on when you decided you were going to commit to Barstool and leave life in the cubes behind. Were you nervous that it wouldn't work out? Can you talk a bit about how that whole decision went down? I'm working on a podcast and have been taking some comedy classes on the side since college, but I don't have a serious path on how I could do something like that for a career. This is also the sort of thing I'm talking about. And I think you realize too many things in life too late. I was listening to Andrew Santino and Ryan Sickler. Cheeto is on the new episode of The Honeydew. If you don't know Ryan Sickler, he's one of my favorite comics and podcasts in the game right now. Honeydew, Ryan Sickler, top five most underrated gem out there. And Santino was on, and Santino was telling a story about Jim Carrey, and because he was on a show with Jim Carrey. And this was after Jim Carrey was like a monster. And he was saying some hippy dippy shit. Like, you know, you just like, you got to let go of all material possessions. You got to let go of all this superficial shit and just like live life. And Ryan and Andrew were joking, saying that's something that just rich people say. That's, you're never saying that when you are dead broke, trying to find your next meal, trying to scrap together rent checks, where you just go, you know what? It's not about material possessions. I don't need this apartment. I don't need these clothes on my back. Because yes, you do need those things. And yes, that is something that sounds obnoxious coming from rich people who have all of that stuff. But also, doesn't it make sense that Jim Carrey, who's a guy who came from nothing, worked through with his incredible talent, worked through his whole career, achieved the career he wanted, made the money he dreamed of to obtain all of the possessions and the things he wanted. And from his point of view, his now perspective is get rid of all that. It ain't worth it. There's something to be said for that. And it's like, you're never, it's impossible, I think, to like get it through to your brain when you don't have those things, because you're like, I want that. I want to try it. I want to get rich. I want to try to be able to go wherever I want and buy whatever I want and do whatever I want. But it is telling that everybody that gets there ends up, you know, in rehab or having a meltdown or ends up divorced or ends up alone or worse, in jail or dead or whatever. There's very, very few people that you can say like have that unimaginable wealth and achieved all the success and are like, you know what, man? Shit's easy. And I loved it. And I wouldn't change anything. That's why I always look at guys like Justin Timberlake is like this low-key dude who had fame since he was a kid, succeeded in movies as well as the music and TV and is handsome and has the celebrity wife and the family. And he just chills. You don't really hear his name. He doesn't get involved in the law. Doesn't break the law. Doesn't have scandals, whatever. There's very few of those. And there's much more of the guys that's like, oh yeah, you loved him until he had his like mental breakdown. Or that guy, you know, got sick and had to go to rehab. Or that guy went to jail or whatever. Or that, you know, these people who do have it all say the same sort of thing. Anyway, that's not really answering your question. I guess my point to that being that more now than ever, I think you can do different paths. Like, even back when I was doing this, there wasn't as many options. There was some, and I ended up taking one of them. But when I was getting out of college, I don't even know how I got my job at Deloitte. I went to monster.com. Remember that shit? Like Career Builder and Monster and those websites? Now they've been completely taken over and dominated by like the Zip Recruiters of the world. But I went to those, like, those were the websites that would advertise at the Super Bowl. And I like put my resume on there, which I made up in college. I think I got an email from Deloitte and Touche saying, do you want to interview here? I was like, sure. I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about, but I've heard of that company and they'll give me a paycheck. Okay. And I was doing that because all my friends were doing that. And that's just like, go to finance. You live in New York, make the money, get the benefits. That's it. Buy the house, all that shit. And then once I did that, I kind of opened, I learned about the world of the internet. I was sitting on the fucking toilet in my apartment in Hoboken, one of the places when I was at my happiest, when I was living with guys, cheap apartment, $800 a month, had a nice little backyard, living in downtown Hoboken, amazing. I was reading Maxim magazine. I opened it up. It was like new tech waves to be in on. And it said Tumblr. Like Tumblr is this new microblogging website. Like it can help you blog. And I was like, I'm going to start a Tumblr blog account because I want to write. And that was an avenue that took me to where I am today. And so I was lucky that I lived in an era where blogging and pictures and the internet and videos and all that kind of shit started to happen. But that was really, even then, that was 2007. That was still all kind of new. You still just kind of had to do like the traditional way. Now, you know, with every app that comes out and every new platform and every new subscription service or paywall service or whatever, it's more and more for like, you can just become an individual enterprise. You yourself. You can be a girl making shit on Etsy. You can be a guy making funny videos. You can be a family who does pranks and puts them on social media. You can create your own shit and just sell it through all of these websites, all of these apps with all of these, you know, here's where you package it. Here's how you ship it. And here's how you distribute it. All these things that are just available to you, the average ass person. You don't need an agency or a manager or an agent or there's no gatekeeping anymore. And so I think now more than ever, there's like a double-edged sword to it. Like you can be stuck as an accountant and you want to do something, right? The good news is there are no more barriers of entry. Very few. They're all reduced. If you've got it, like you can go. But that's the other side of it where it's like there are no more excuses. Because if you think your shit's really funny or you think you're really hot or you think your music's really good, or you think that your clothes you make are really good, well, we'll find out. Because you're going to put it on the internet, and you're going to market it to the people you know, and if they buy it, and their friends buy it, and friends of friends talk about it, and it grows, then bam, you made it. And if they don't, well, then you have your answer. Because you can't blame, you can't be like, oh man, if Hollywood would just give me a shot, or whatever. It's like, no, here's your shot. But the people who love you and know you aren't buying your clothes or listening to your music or reading your blog or laughing at your videos or retweeting your tweets, you know? So if it's like now's the time to try, but also if you fail, you have no reason other than like I'm not good enough or I wasn't trying hard enough. And I think more often than not, it's not I'm not trying hard enough. I feel like the people who are motivated enough to try are probably going to like, I think there are people who are just content to do it and they might not be the happiest, but they're just like, this is what I do. I have my house in Oklahoma and I'm good. But the people who are even itching enough to be like, how do I get out of this and do something more? You probably have the personality and the what it takes to like get there. It's just about like doing it and trying hard enough and committing your whole fucking life to it. So there's no like trick to it. Let me say this about when you ask like people who ask me directly about my process. On the one hand, I don't like to admit it. Again, kind of cuts both ways. I'm reluctant to talk about it in the sense of a lot of people are like, yo, man, like you took a chance and it paid off. Like, good for you. And I'm like, eh, I didn't really take a chance. I'm not one of those guys who has the story of like, I just had my balls and my drive and I just went for it and I grinded it out. And I was sleeping on the couch of my buddies and I was making no money and I was down to my last penny and I finally made it in the blog world and it was all worth it. I don't have that, like, you know, American dream type story of like rags to riches sort of thing, which on the one hand is like, and some people glamorize that. That's my word of the day. I've said that several times, but that's not really how it worked for me. And on the one hand, I'm kind of like, oh shit, I think people like that. On the other hand, I love the fact the way I did it, I never took a risk. I took a pay cut, but that was it. I never had a moment that was like, I am not going to have a paycheck. I don't have any money. I don't have my benefits. I'm in a hole here and I got my back against the wall and it's now or never. I was fucking savvy enough to set that shit up where I had a job and I wasn't ready to jump ship to full-time at Barstool until the money was right and my benefits were right and I held on at Barstool and I dug my heels in until they fired me and I got a severance package and I got Cobra benefits and everything overlapped perfectly. It was never like, I'm an accountant, I quit, and now let me start my Barstool career. I overlapped those two things, so I was making double the money. I was getting two paychecks. I came out of school, and I signed at Deloitte, and I think it was a weird number. It was like $60,000 to start, and I had my MBA, and I think that got me to like $67,000. And which was like, nobody else was making that extra $7,000. Everybody was making like 60. So I felt like, oh man, I'm making more than everyone because I have my MBA. Oh, like that matters, right? And then I was making 25K at Barstool, untaxed, sent me just a check. Dave would just send me a check every month, 25K, like under the table. So at that point, like I said, that's why I loved 26, because I was making like 100K. And I was like, this is amazing. I have no bills. I'm making this money under the table. I'm like living the dream, but I had it all overlap and then didn't really leave Deloitte until Barstool was fully set and still wouldn't even leave Deloitte. I still didn't even quit. I made them fire me so that I got that severance and I got that Cobra package. So on the one hand, I don't love that I don't have the, I'm a risk taker who just took the leap of faith. On the other hand, I love that I was savvy enough and snake it till you make it that I was making double money and I took the Barstool job when it was like fully time to really run with it. So, you know, I can't tell you like, what was that process like for me? That's what I did. I worked at one thing on the side while I still kept my other job and I would work long. I would blog at night and in the morning and off hours and on weekends, weird shit that people don't think about. And I don't think of it as like when you hear like a band made it, it's like, oh man, that guy was like, you know, in his garage in the basement playing his guitar 24 hours a day. He like never came out. He like lived, you know, you hear like those kind of stories. You don't think about it for my job, but it was like, there were times where my friends were going to go out and I was like, I'm going to stay home and write this blog. And they were like, why? Like who, for who? You're not making any money. Like you don't have that big of an audience. You're not going to come out with us because you want to do this like bracket tournament that you made up for your blog. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm staying home to do this. Little things like that, that like, I'm not saying that's like the most glamorous story or the most like inspirational thing, but it was like, I worked at this weird thing on off hours and had it all overlap so that I could transition out of one job into another. That's how I did it. I think I got super lucky. I think I was at the right place at the right time. I think I took a couple break. I took a deep, like a pretty big pay cut, like I said, from making that double salary. I went from twice, you know, two paychecks to one paycheck, and the one paycheck was lesser than my first job. So I took like a $40,000 pay cut, but it was still enough money to get by as a young guy with no bills, so it wasn't that big of a risk. But all of this is to say that's how my decision went down, to the point that I didn't have parents who were like not supportive, because I was like, I've thought this all out. Here's how it's going to work. I'm doing both of these things at the same time. And they're both viable. If one disappears, I've got the other one. Don't worry. And one day I think I can do this full time. And it was kind of like a well thought out plan. So I never had that like dramatic moment. And to be honest, I don't think I would have done it. I don't think I would have, like, if Dave had come to me in the very beginning and said, like, quit right now, I don't know. I might have. I probably would have if he was like, because I probably would have said to myself, I'm young. This is the time to take that risk. Everything I was talking about in the beginning, I don't need the money. I don't have to worry about the kids and the bills and shit. Let me at least give it a shot. But I would have been very reluctant to be like, this is it. This is my dream. I'm going to do it. I probably would have been like, I'm just going to stick with this job that pays me really well and have fun outside of my job. But, you know, props to the people who can say, I think we talked about it with PFT and Jeff D. Lowe when we did Behind the Blog. There are some people out there that gave up like $100,000 job and a set, firm, stable career path to do their dream. More power to the people who can do that. I just prefer snake it till you make it, where you can do both or juggle both until everything kind of works out for your benefit. Kieran asked, what's your greatest stupid fear? Not real ones like, oh my God, what if something happened to my kids? Like stupid fears, like if your dick stopped working or your hair fell out. Mine personally is that I'm afraid of meeting a person who's smarter than me, since I've done a glorious job of not spending long amounts of time around people who are on my intelligence level. I would imagine, you know, that's, I'm hoping, kind of a joke, and not to get all like Gary V here, but if you are purposely spending your life surrounding yourself with dumb people, that is not a recipe for success. I am always interested to talk to people who are better, smarter, bigger, more successful, more interesting, funnier than I am. Like, cause that is how I even got the job I have now. The way, like, I have decided, I thought about this recently when I finally can cash out my Barstool equity and I finally, like, hopefully, you know, I'm hoping that the money and the success makes it all worth it, the whole journey. And as I've pretty much listed out exactly in this podcast why it won't be worth it, but I'm hoping that, you know, I'll have some of that feeling. And I've decided I want to throw a banging-ass party for all of my friends along the way, because all of those people are basically what became, like, how my persona and how my career at Barstool, like, grew and played out. Because I was surrounded by what I think to be the funniest people, like, in the world. I know everybody thinks that their friend group is, like, hilarious. I think the guys that I hang out with, I'm like an amalgam of all of them. The way that we talk, the jokes that we make, the words that we use, the stories we talk about, all of that, like, combined in me, where when I was blogging, I was an interesting person because I was, like, telling stories about all of my crew and places that we went and things that we did and things I learned from him and stuff I picked up from her and all that shit, where I'm like, if you were in my life from, let's call it, really, really more like college on, like 21 to 27, if you were in my life, if we hooked up, if we dated, if we were friends, if we were family, if we worked together, you were a part of like my Barstool journey. Because so much of that, this job is just like being yourself and being who you are and putting your story out there, that everyone that comes into your life and touches your life in some way or leaves something with you, if somebody liked it, if somebody laughed at it, if it resonated with somebody, it's because of all the people around me. So I would love to throw some, like, blow a huge bag of money when I first get it and have everybody come out to some beautiful fucking yacht or some shit on the water or the beach or whatever and be like, this is for, you know, every little bit of the way that made this all possible. But that was my point, to say surround yourself with like good people and interesting people. My biggest irrational fear, the hair one is a good one. And I know that's stupid. He just gave it there. But the only thing that really matters when you get older as a guy is having some hair. You can't get fat. But, you know, dad bods in, everybody kind of puts on some pounds, you get out of shape, women and people don't expect you to be like shredded and in shape. You don't have to be great looking, you don't have to have the chiseled jaw, the classic look, but the hair kind of is the one thing that really is a great separator. You either got hair or you don't. You're either bald or you got some flow. And the fucking shitty thing about it is you can't do anything about it. I mean, yeah, listen, I hopped on the Propecia immediately. That's one thing I would tell people, like, guys, even if you got hair now, if you're starting to get up there and you even think there's a chance you're going to thin, get on the Propecia. Get on the medicine. If it's like the most important thing to you, as we're saying here, guys are like, I got to have my hair because it's the one thing that women like. They want to run their hands through it. It keeps you young, makes you feel good. If it's that important, take the medication that keeps your fucking hair. Go to Roman. Go to GetRoman.com. I mean, why not do it? And the people who are worried, like, oh, what about the side effects where, like, you can't really get your dick hard? It's like, first of all, that barely happens. Second of all, who even needs to get your dick hard if you're a bald fucking uggo? No one's even going to bang you if you're bald and ugly anyway. So who cares about your dick? You're putting the cart before the horse on this one. Let's keep the hair. First you keep the hair, then you fuck the girls. Then you got to worry about your dick. Take the pills, take the gummies, go to Fleischmann Salon, eat the gummies, all that shit. Because other than that, you can't do shit about it. If your body and your genes and your genetics and all that shit just say you're going to lose your hair, you're going to fucking lose your hair. I also have an irrational fear, and I don't think it's irrational, but I think that's what makes it irrational, is in this job that I'm going to just like, every step of the way in my career, as I've aged, my content has changed to fit that age like group. When I was young, I was partying and going out, living in the fucking garbage apartments in the city, and I was speaking to those people. And they've all aged with me, but now, if you are a mid-30s divorced dad, you can tune into my content, and you can find interest in it, and download, subscribe to my podcast, or follow my account. And I think I've proven that every step of the way, I'm interesting enough, at least, that people will want to continue to hear more. But I'm also like, what if one day I wake up and the whole collective of the internet just decides I don't want to listen to this guy anymore? It could happen. Probably won't happen because every time somebody, I mean, the amount of people who follow an Instagram account every day but unfollow my account, it's like there's just as many people who are losing interest as I do have people gaining interest. And I got to keep that so that I keep growing, right? But what if all of a sudden that just flips? That just inverts and all of a sudden mass exodus of people? That's probably my number one fear of like, it's been 15 fucking years of people either taking interest in what I say or hate following or wanting to argue with me because they don't agree with me or liking me because they do agree with me. I don't think it's going anywhere, but I get scared that it absolutely will just poof, disappear. And I feel like anybody who has non-traditional career feels that way. Like, what if this all just goes away? And it's like, why the fuck would it? It's been nearly, a decade and a half of that shit happening. All right, we'll wrap up here with a direct question story here. I know I've been talking very grand kind of existential shit here, but this came from Kelsey a while back. She said, I am working from home with my ex-boyfriend from high school. To clarify, I'm a lesbian and we are 26 now. So any relationship in high school is irrelevant. I agree with that. I mean, high school relationships are not real life relationships. I would say the college relationships aren't real relationships either. I would even say that freshly out of college doesn't matter. Until you start to deal with real life things, your relationship's not real life either. But we both live in the same apartment complex and work for the same company. When they said we had to work from home, we figured we would work at his place so we wouldn't go crazy by ourselves. His girlfriend lives out of town and knows I'm here working with him. Well, she's coming to visit him this weekend and staying for the week. He told me she hates us working together and doesn't like me, all because we dated in high school. I said to him, does she know what I look like and that I like girls? He said, yeah, but she doesn't want you here when she comes. Am I the nut job or is she the asshole for thinking I'm trying to steal her boyfriend? I mean, now this is a very specific question that can opens up to a broader thing. If you are in a relationship and if you are jealous of the lesbian, you probably need to look in the mirror and address some of your jealousy issues. Sure, they fucked in the past. I don't know. I'm going to talk myself out of this one. I think if there's a guy and a girl who have had history together and they're in the same room for an extended period of time, there is a chance they could say, you know what? Let's do it again. I've already been inside you. You've already been inside me. Why don't we do it again? Because I don't know, we're drunk or we're lonely or we're just bored. Or let's have some fucking fun. It doesn't really count because it's already really happened. I could see that happening. This girl is now a full-blown lesbian who has no interest in guys. it's a little bit silly. I can understand the concern of like, are you sure there's nothing there because you guys once were together? Can you assure me there's no chemistry there that I have to worry about? As long as that's been done, if you can't allow your boyfriend to be around lesbians, even with a little bit of history, you probably have to address your jealousy issues. And that, I think, is the larger discussion of what in relationships at this point in life. Is the jealousy issues, I mean, are an absolute non-starter for me at my age now. It's something that I feel like I dealt with my whole adult life after school, where I was like, yeah, no, I get it. Like, guys and girls are put on this planet to fuck each other, and platonic friendships are not a thing, and I can understand when a girl you're dating doesn't want you to be around any other women because, yeah, that's most times in a lot of situations, people do end up fucking. And so the jealousy is, is like reasonable. And then as I got older, and for a period of time, I do believe when you're young, you're in your 20s, when you're dumb and drunk and fucking and partying, that jealousy probably is a little more warranted. But as you get older, I refuse to do the jealousy. I'm just not. It's just if you've got issues with social media where you don't trust me and you need passwords and you need to read DMs and you need to see who I follow and I can't be with these people alone and I can't go here or do that. Where are you at all times? I need to check in. I need to know all that shit. I'm out. I'm not doing it. I'm not putting up with it. And I, being at Barstool, I used to overcompensate for it, where it was like, I remember when there's only a handful of guys doing Barstool, I remember thinking, it does suck for my girlfriend, because what girl has to put up with the guy who's posting local smoke shows and going out to guest bartending with smoke show bartenders, and we're going to parties and I'm talking to girls online and we're talking to internet models and all that shit. Like, no girl should have to put up with that. So I would overcompensate and I would apologize and I would try my best to minimize and all that shit. And then I realized that, yeah, maybe my situation is unique, but every relationship I knew of had some version of that. So yeah, maybe you're not finding local smoke shows and going to parties, but you're going out on like corporate retreats, or you're going to some corporate party. And that's what your girlfriend is, or your boyfriend is jealous about. And everybody, what I thought was so unique to my world, I realized a million other guys I talked to were like, oh, that's just like me with my girl, except it's XYZ. Everybody has dumb fucking shit that their boyfriend or girlfriend or fiance or wife or husband get jealous about. And it is incomprehensible why either side puts up with it. Why the person who's jealous even allows, like, why are you going to date this person if you spend all of your time thinking about what they're doing and who they're with and are they cheating and all that shit? Just be done with it, because clearly they don't make you comfortable enough. And the people who are getting receiving the jealousy, why are you going to sit there and try to defend yourself and justify yourself and constantly apologize and walk on eggshells and overcompensate? You're just not a fucking fit. I can't. It's the number one thing for me as I've gotten older with relationships and romance and shit is like, if you're going to be jealous, we ain't doing it. If I'm going to have to be fighting and defending myself, because eventually you reach the point where it's like, I'm not doing any of those things. All of this is bullshit. But if you're going to treat me like that, well, then what's the fucking point? I might as well go do it, because you're treating me like I already am doing it. And nothing you say can fix it. Nothing. The jealousy and the technology, man, the fucking technology of it all is ruining the world, because it's passwords and DMs and accounts and all that shit. And so a lot of people are cheating. A lot of people are running around and they're doing shit they shouldn't do and all that stuff. But the constant worry and fear about it that looms over everybody and every relationship is fucking insanity. And if you do it to yourself, whether it's the fucking lesbian that you used to date from high school way back that your new girlfriend can't handle because you're working from home together, or it's your relationship where you have coworkers that people don't like, or you have friends or exes or whatever, not gonna fucking do it. Hats off to anybody who can put up with it. But I think that any relationship that has major trust issues, I think it's not even worth it from the jump. When people are like, you should work on it, work through those trust issues, all that shit, I don't even say do that. I think the minute that there are deep trust issues, ain't fucking worth your time. Because you will constantly be climbing that mountain to prove yourself, and they will constantly be moving the goalposts. I used to be like, okay, this makes you uncomfortable, I'll stop doing that. Well, now it's not that anymore. Now it's this that makes you uncomfortable. Well, I'll stop doing that. And then we'll move in together. And then we'll do this together. And we'll do that together. And it was never enough because it's a personality trait on some people. And you hope that you disarm that and you change that person because of who you are. But if you don't, that means you're not the right person for them. The right person will come along and make them stop being jealous. It ain't you. So stop trying to fucking do it and just poof, be gone. There's too many people out there, too many dating apps, too many ways to meet your soulmate who's not jealous, all that shit. Why fucking waste it beating your head against the wall, rolling the fucking rock up the hill, putting a square peg in a round hole, whatever you want to call it. The amount of people who just can't recognize when you're not a fit for someone. And I did it myself too, where it was like, there's red flags along the way in certain relationships and things where you're like, this isn't working. And rather than just admitting that, and pulling the plug and going on and finding someone where it is working, you try to make something broken, try to fix something that's broken, or you try to make something that's not working work, and it's just like, why? Why are you fucking doing this? When people say like relationships are work, I get it, but it shouldn't be like literal work where you wake up in the morning and dread it and have to work like it's a boss and worry and fear the other person and she's going to get mad at me. He's going to be upset with me. All that shit. The minute that stuff starts, peace, be gone. It's my number one lesson for 2022. If you're in a bad, abusive relationship, all that, get the fuck out. If you are in a relationship that you constantly question and worry about, get the fuck out. If you are dating someone who you are afraid of, get the fuck out. Whether that is physically, literally, or it's emotionally, whether you are afraid, when you're afraid to tell them things, when you know that certain things are going to set them off. If you are afraid of your relationship in any way, get the fuck out. And I'll see you mutts next week. Hit the KFC Radio mailbox. If you go to KFC Barstool on Twitter and on Instagram, I'll post the link. I want to hear more questions. I want to hear more stories. I'm going to be flying solo to kick things off here in 2022. If you like the solo pod, let me know. I hate to be a diva. I hate to be high maintenance, but I am still going through this podcast writer's block, if you will, podcaster's block. And I do need the reassurance that people, like I said, my irrational fear is that you guys are all just going to be like, I'm not listening to this anymore. And I do need to kind of hear that people like it. I want to hear your questions. The more questions that you ask, the more I know people are listening and the more I know that you want to hear from me. So the more feedback, the better the show will be. So get at me. Send me messages. I always appreciate the DMs. Send me tweets, all that. Huh? Leave a comment. And drop a comment below if you're watching on YouTube. What do you want to hear from me? What do you want to talk about? And hit me with more questions. We'll be back next week for a solo ep of the Kevin Clancy Show.